Hi, everyone. It's Still Trebilcock here. Very excited to have the magnificent, wonderful, clever, and very smart and bright, and most particularly Australian clever fellow, Max Egan. Max, thanks so much for coming on our show on People's
Pleasure,
Internet
Jill.
Radio tonight with me. Good to have you here, Max. Max, you nearly died. You got meningitis, sick. And nearly died.
Yeah, I got pretty sick.
Crikey, because the last time we spoke with you, you were saying you wanted to go into Gaza, but something had happened, and you were a bit trippy about it, like as in terms of you were saying, everything's gone wrong and I just can't go. There must be a reason for it. And then 2 days later, you had meningitis? What happened?
That's pretty well it. I got meningitis. I cancelled or postponed my trip to Gaza for a completely unrelated reason. Because I'm taking a young cameraman in there with me, and I didn't feel safe taking him across the Sinai. So I wanted to try to
secure some
sort of safe passage across the Sinai. So I cancelled or postponed only for about a week and then came down with meningitis. Yeah. So had I gone, I would have been fine when I left. Had I honored the ticket, I would have been fine, and I would have gone there, and I would have melted down with meningitis pretty well as I arrived in Gaza. I would have been starting to feel it then, when I look at the timing of it. So it's interesting timing that I didn't go. Of course, had I gone there, I would have had no medication. I would have probably died in Gaza. I would have taken meningitis in and probably infected a lot of them, which wouldn't have been very good.
Exactly.
It's good to follow your intuition. It's really good when you have these intuitive moments and you think, no, there's something wrong with this. I need to step away from this for the moment. It's really important when people have these moments that they listen to them, because that's what I did. I always listened to my intuition.
That's exactly what I noticed, because it was intuitive. I mean, you actually, even though it was practical and it was protective of the boy, at the same time you were saying, I've got an intuition about this. There's something wrong, or something doesn't feel right.
Yeah, well, obviously I was right. And so I didn't go, and thank God I didn't. I mean, the ticket's still there, but I mean, everything turned to hell in Gaza that week as well. The whole Sinai erupted into absolute chaos. General Sisi's just gone crazy. He's just, like, he's virtually bulldozing all of the Egyptian side of Rafah, the town of Rafah, and moving it 5 kilometers away from the border. So he's creating a buffer zone, he says. I mean, all he's really doing is isolating the people in Gaza more and more. The Rafah border is now closed indefinitely, so the only way in is through Egypt, and Egypt just won't let anybody in. I mean, Israel just won't let anybody in. Even Mads Gilbert, the doctor, they won't let in. They wouldn't let Jerry Adams in. Yeah. They certainly won't let me in. They won't let anybody in with a camera or anybody who wants to actually help the Palestinian people. They won't let them in. And if Israel is the only to Gaza Strip, then this spells a very, very bad day for the people of Palestine.
Oh, it's absolutely tragic. And Max, look, we had the briefest of Snapchats in which you said to me something about that I really want you to explain a little bit more. I mean, we are going to go in on to sovereignty and trust war and a few other things I want to ask you about in particular, and also spirituality, actually. But while we're on the topic of this thing that you're very passionate and have a very paternal sort of nurturing sort of attitude, a loving attitude about wanting to help Palestinians. You mentioned something about these Jews are not the so-called chosen people. They're some European Jews or something. Now, what was that all about?
I don't believe there are any chosen people to begin with. I think that's a bunch of rubbish. Whoever thinks they're chosen has an ego or believes someone else's idea of reality. I don't buy into any doctrines written in any books. I don't care what the religion is. I don't buy into it. I respect other people's views if they want to buy into that stuff, but I don't buy into any of it. So I don't respect that there is any chosen people. It's a scam. But the people who are populating Israel at the moment are white-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, non-Semitic Jews from Europe. They're Khazars from the Khazar region, from the region around Ukraine, actually, around Kiev. There was a nation that adopted the Jewish faith back in 740 AD. The nation lasted until around about the turn of the millennia. You know, around about 900 to 1200, somewhere in there. It's sort of sketchy. But they adopted the Jewish faith. Mm. They were basically, they had the Christian army coming at them from one side. They had the Muslim army coming at them from the other, both asking them to convert to their cause, which would have made them subservient to either the caliph or the pope. And they didn't want to do that, so they converted to Judaism. because both Muslims and Christians respected the Jews, and so they converted to Judaism, and these two countries left them alone. Eventually, they got kicked out of the area. I think it was Genghis Khan that actually drove them out. They ended up nomads wandering around Europe, and they became the Jews of Europe. A lot of them settled in Russia, in Germany. They moved everywhere, all over the world, England, America. I mean, they're all over the place. All the Bolshevik Jews from Russia, these were all Khazars. A lot of the gypsies that were wandering around Europe were Khazars. And these are the people who basically founded Zionism and formulated the plan to go and steal Palestine. Okay, well, we're Jews. We're the chosen ones. These people became more zealous Jews than the actual Jews. But they're white-skinned, non-Semitic people. They're from Europe. They're not the bloodline, the original bloodline that Israel was promised to. They're not the descendants of Abraham or anything like that. They're white-skinned Western European Jews who have no genetic claim, no ancestral claim to the land, who've basically just usurped the faith. And if you go to Israel, you find the Semitic Jews are the most downtrodden people in Israel. They're like second-class citizens. And all Israel has done since its foundation is stomp on all the Semitic peoples all around it. I mean, a Semite is a Middle Eastern person, you know, like dark skin, black hair, brown eyes. These are Semites. For all the Arabs are Semites. These are Semitic people. And here you've got this non-Semitic race in the middle of them, stomping on all of them, claiming that anybody who speaks out against it is anti-Semitic. It's amazing. It's amazing. But the whole thing has been hijacked. And, of course, the actual Jews get the blame for the whole thing. But, I mean, they're able to do it because Judaism's a supremacist ideology anyway. That's how they're able to get away with this whole concept of the chosen ones. It's just a crock. It's an absolute crock. There are no chosen. Those who believe they are chosen are actually lower life forms than the rest of humanity because their ego has got in the way of reality. That's what I think anyway. I feel sorry for them that they believe they're chosen. They're so deranged and have such a warped worldview that they believe they're chosen. I feel very sorry for these people.
Well, logic and reasoning, that's what you call an appeal to authority. You know, it was in the Bible. God said, we are the chosen people. And then there's also like a red herring and a straw man fallacy because basically there's a whole lot of things that is actually. It would have so many logical fallacies in it, it's just not funny. Because, you know, basically they're just sort of trying to get some sort of appeal to authority. We are the chosen people. And they internalize it and they believe it and they're making such a mess. And just when you say that guys just bulldozing houses and people, like, just the whole thing of war is so grotesque. It is so alienated from our humanity. It just sort of blows my mind that we can have that ability in our psyche to just go so grotesque. It's the only word I can really think of.
Well, you know, evil's got to be there. You've got to have the choice to go wrong, otherwise you can never choose to go right. And when you look at the Judaism, it's based in ego. I mean, you're the chosen people. This causes ego to kick in, and you've got the victim mentality that's taught through Israel as well. I mean, the people are taught that they're victims. Everybody hates them, and it's because they're the chosen people. So you've got this ego and this need to defend yourself against all of this hatred. I mean, they're taught that the whole world is drooling Nazis who want to wipe out the Jews. That's what they're taught. So it's a program. It's all programming. And the problem is, you know, when people try to address this, they go into this massive let's hate the Jews thing and let's hate Israel. I don't hate Israel. I don't hate the Jews. I don't even hate Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm disgusted by the actions of the country. I'm frustrated by the level of programming in the people. I'm frustrated that people do these things and can't see the forest for the trees. And sometimes I get a little bit outspoken about it, but it's anger born from frustration. It's not out of hatred. I do what I do because
I
love mankind. I love humanity. I don't hate Jews. I don't hate anybody. I don't even think I know how to hate anybody. I get angry. I get pissed off and I'll scream about it. Absolutely I will because I've got to release it somehow. But it's born from love.
Yeah.
You know, I see we have a massive potential for change and we have a massive potential to create something beautiful here and we're not doing it. We're squandering the opportunities that reality has given us and we have an opportunity to make something better because the system is exposed so bare now. Everyone can see it. Everyone can see how corrupt the world is. So we've got a great opportunity here. If we could get out of the hatred and start doing what we do out of love, then things will change. We've got to shift the frequency. Get out of the hatred and the fear, and if you're angry, be angry because you love mankind. Be angry because you're not free and because your children aren't free and realize that you can change this by doing what you do out of love. So channel that anger into love, into positive action. That's what I do. And it works. Yeah, it's a difference, you know.
It absolutely does. And it's that sort of, I don't really want to call it divine anger, but it's that sort of, that pure indignation and wrath at the lack of justice. You know, like, well,
even
when
justice,
it's just not
justice,
fair.
Justice is a man-made concept. Justice
right,
is,
it's the
is
wrong
a man-made
word,
idea.
You know,
it's a matter of, I mean.
I should have said like, first.
It's a thing. I mean, we think that way, justice. I mean, even I've got a friend, Ken O'Keefe, his motto is truth, justice, peace. You know, peace is a natural thing. Truth is a natural thing, but justice is a man-made construct. Justice, there's no justice in reality. There's no justice in the animal kingdom. There's no justice in nature. You know, there's going to be weaker people, weaker species that get stomped on. That's the way it is. And,
in the animal kingdom as well. Like, you can't say there's no justice because there is fairness. Anyway, we'll remove the word justice. And
yeah,
we'll
justice is a, you know what I'm saying? Justice is a concept that we've written down on paper, and we've got this idea that things should be like this and everything should be fair. Well, reality isn't fair. That's what I'm trying to say. Reality isn't fair. It's going to be weaker people that get stomped on, and that's the way they learn.
Yeah.
This is the way it has to be. Maybe the people who stomped on them will learn not to do that, you know?
Okay, so if you're saying that reality isn't fair, then why are you fighting for fairness?
I'm not fighting for fairness.
What would you say you were fighting for?
I'm fighting for compassion. I'm fighting for a chance to embrace human potential. You know,
yes.
I'm fighting to not squander the gift that we've been given in this life and the gift we've been given with this earth and the potential that we have. I'm fighting to see a better world, not a fair world. The world will never be fair. Fair, again, is another concept we've come up with. You know, you remove judgment from all of this and see the potential that we have to create something fantastic. The only thing we're limited by is our belief that something is not possible. That's the only thing that limits us. Anything is possible.
Okay, so when
when
we create, okay, I believe you, Max. I think because you see, I'm at a great advantage over you because I've listened to a lot of your pods, whereas you don't know how I think. So, I'm just learning how you think. But you know, when I do a show, I research people a lot, and I've been having a wonderful time listening to a lot of the things you have to say, and I'm sort of untangling a lot of the things that you have said, and I do. Understand exactly what you're coming from. I mean, not exactly, but I do. I sort of get you in a lot of ways. And so now it begs the question, what you just said. So if, you know, I know that you're a compassionately motivated person that wants, you know, the world to be a harmonious how would you like the world to look? You just said, basically, you want it, you know, like you want us to dream up a really cooperative, interdependent, but harmoniously interdependent, communicative, negotiable, agreeable sort of a future, yeah?
Well, just a world where people are free to express themselves to the fullest of their potential. I mean, we're a world where we respect each other, a world where we're not constrained by someone else's idea of what reality should be, and especially when that idea is destroying our habitat, which is what's going on. I mean, that's what's really going on is that we're operating according to someone else's idea of what reality should be, and we're forced to pay to be here, which puts us all into a state of artificial scarcity, so we're never free to express ourselves. The only thing we can possibly do to survive is destroy the world around us or exploit the people around us. This is not right. You know, so end the private issuance of currency, institute a real education system and see what we can do. See where we could go from this point. We could certainly go somewhere very different to what we've got now. And I think that humankind wants to do this. I think consciousness wants to shift. But there's a lot of people on the planet who control this little sandpit, who want to maintain control of this little sandpit, and they know that the best way to do it is to keep people in a negative vibratory state. This is why they're doing all the stuff in the Middle East, why they're doing all the stuff in Gaza. This is why they're just going in there now and arresting hundreds of children in the West Bank, just kidnapping children for no reason, just taking them from their parents, just to aggravate the parents, whip them up into a frenzy, and to get the world into a state where we're all angry. That's what it's about. They want everyone to be angry. They want everyone to be in thinking violent thoughts and negative thoughts. You know, if we can do what we do, look at it from a spiritual perspective. Do what we do out of love, which is why I do what I do. I do it out of love. It's unconditional love. I don't hate the people that I speak out against. I'll call someone a sociopathic little moron. Call tall Tony Abbott a sociopathic, warmongering little cretin, and that the human gene pool would be better had he been drowned at birth. And I can say that because it's true, not because I hate him. You know? I mean, I've got no problem calling a spade, but you've got to stand up and speak in a language people understand, but motivate yourself in love. But there's so much going on in the world at the moment, and they're really trying to keep people in a negative state. And I've fallen into it as well. With what they did in Gaza last year, they dragged me down from where I was, and my energy changed, and I ended up in such a profoundly negative state because I was so upset and I was so angry, and I spent days in tears, and that's exactly what they want. They want people to go to that state, because when you go to that state, you start operating irrationally, you start operating from a place which is not pure, it's not from love, and you fall. Mm. You create the wrong energy. Consciousness wants to shift, and that's why they're doing so many things around the world at the moment to try to hang on to what they've got, because the whole world's about to stand up and just shake their hands of this and say, hey, look, guys, we've had enough. We're not playing this game anymore. We're going to go over this way now. You can come with us or you can get left behind. But unfortunately, a lot of people say, well, we're going to go this way now, but we're going to kill you before we do it. That's not the right attitude. I mean, I don't want revenge against these people. They're misguided. They don't know. Now, even if they're psychopaths, you know, they can't help that. It's just the way they are. They made the wrong choices. I have no judgment of them, but I have to do what I do because I can see the potential that we've got. You know, there's a spiritual answer to all of this, Jill. There really is. I mean, people are looking at things from the wrong perspective. And even with the whole sovereignty thing, people are expecting that there's a way out of this mess by using the rules that this mess has given them. Forget the rules. Forget anything anybody wrote down. If you've got to fill out any forms or stamp any pieces of paper or do anything to establish your freedom, you're doing it according to someone else's ideas. How free do you think you are? What on earth makes you think their ideas are valid? Just be yourself. Live your life to what you are. Don't look back. Don't research all that stuff because it's a waste of time. There are no rules in this system that are going to free you from this system. There is no remedy that will be found anywhere within the parameters of this system. Every person on this planet is sovereign. They are already sovereign. And even that is just a word. You're alive. That's what all it takes to be sovereign. If anybody else has got an idea, ask them to give you proof of claim that they own the vehicle that you inhabit. If they can't show you that proof of claim, tell them to piss off. It's got nothing to do with you. There's no mechanism here. A lot of these people go down, oh, look, lose the name, win the game. You heard that one? This meme that's going around, lose the name, win the game. If you lose the name, you say you haven't got a name, you don't claim the birth certificate, all this stuff, you're free of their system. No, you're not. You're not free until everybody's free. And if you're going to walk around in this little bubble saying, I'm free because I don't use a name, you're just allowing the world to be destroyed around you because you're not participating anymore. You know, you can't free yourself of this system while you live on this planet until we change the way we think and stop believing that we're ruled by people, because we're not. We've just got these employees that are out of control. They've tricked everybody into thinking that they rule us because they've taken over the education system. So over a couple of generations, they've turned everything up on its head, and now we suddenly think that our politicians are our rulers. They're not. They're our employees, and they're trashing the planet because we've not been paying attention because we don't know who we are. You know, we're judging each other by all these fictitious parameters. We're going down rabbit holes, looking for people to point the finger at, wanting to establish our personal freedom. We're not looking at the bigger picture. You know, and seeing the opportunities that all of this is. Well, you've got to see the opportunities that this is all providing for us. You know, we've got a pretty big opportunity for freedom here. And I think we're going to do it. I think consciousness wants to shift. That's why they're doing everything they can to ramp things up. I mean, look at the place. Oh my God, we've got wars everywhere. The situation in Gaza is just out of control because there's so much public attention on it now, and they just keep making it worse. So everyone's getting more and more angry, more and more freaked out. You know, even we look at this and we just go into pain and suffering, but because we share what's going on with the Palestinian people. That's why they're doing it. And then we've got all this ISIS and the war in Ukraine and what Ebola and, you know, what else can they think of? What there's going to be something else come along soon, I'm sure. you know, economic disaster. I mean, everything they can think of to keep us in a negative state. They're doing it all just to keep us in this state. What we've got to do is step back from the whole thing because it's all fiction. We made the whole thing up, and we can do something far, far better if we apply ourselves.
Absolutely. We can do something far better. Look, I'd like to take you back to the argument that in nature things are not fair. I'd just like to examine that a little bit because I think it might be hierarchical, and I don't know whether that's fair. That's something that's quite interesting because I have a herd of horses and you know, I'm minding two dogs for someone at the moment. So, like, and I grew up on a farm and in the country, so I've sort of had a very close relationship with nature and animals in a lot of ways. And, you know, bull fights and ram fights and, you know, everything that you sort of see. So I suppose fairness, when I think about it, fairness isn't equal, is it?
I know what you're trying to say. Fairness, people and animals are not born equal. They're not born with equal abilities, so they're not born equal. Everyone's born with equal potential for creative expression, equal potential for creative thought, creative ideas. But in the animal world, I mean, even fairness is a man-made concept which you could apply to something like sports or gaming, okay? Things need to be fair. What you'll find in the animal world, in nature, is that it's balanced. Balance and fairness, we'll say, oh, it's fair and balanced. Well, fair is different to being balanced. Balance is balance, and there's balance in nature. There will always be balance in nature, but it isn't fair.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Weaker species will suffer. Weaker species will suffer, and that may not be fair, but it may be balanced. You know, just to let you know as well, while you're typing on the keyboard, while your mic's on, it's very loud. I just thought I'd let you know it's very loud on
here. I'm sorry. I was doing it. I was actually in response. There's a lot of questions for you in the chat box, and I can't keep up. So I've actually asked Vin if he'd mind taking the questions out of chat box and putting them in Skype, and then you can read them there and then answer them because. It's a very active chat box. It just went crazy for a few minutes while we were so excited.
Well, it says here, can you ask Max what he thinks about the apartheid state that is Australia? I'm absolutely disgusted by it, and this is why I have such an affinity with the Palestinian people, because of what I see being done to my brothers and sisters here. I've actually mentioned this on air a few times recently, that the situation in Gaza of warehousing and surplusing human beings, not just in Gaza, but in Gaza and West Bank in Palestine, is greatly mirrored here in Australia. It's just been done over a longer period. But what we see here in Australia is ethnic cleansing, pure and simple, warehousing and surplusing of human beings, and it's absolutely disgraceful. I'm actually an honorary member. I was adopted into the Noongar tribe of Western Australia, and I have a great affinity with the original people of this country. I've got a lot of original friends, and that's a lot of what gets my blood up about Palestine and Gaza, is the state of this country.
Let's pull it straight from there while we're doing it. I mean, you'll have more questions than we'll be ending to, I'm sure. I've got a new upgraded Skype, and I can't quite work out how to find the chat bit in it yet. But what I wanted to say was, in terms of Aboriginal or original people's sovereignty in Australia, and the fact that we didn't have a treaty, how you know a fair bit about that, Max, and it was one on the list of questions I had for you. It was going to be later in the conversation, but we're right there now. So, would you like? I know you've done.
Well, the fact that there's no treaty means that England has no claim to the country. There was no treaty. There was no invasion. There was no declaration of war. There was no declaration of peace. They just came. They're just boat people. They arrived. They came, and they never left. And it even says in the original charter that they, when I think it was Governor Phillip when he came here, it said that the original law of the country still applies to the original people. There was no suggestion that England owned the country for a second, and English law, British law that was introduced into the country only applied to British citizens who were mainly convicts who were sent out here. So England has no claim to this country whatsoever, so it's good that there's no treaty. I mean, there's people out there now that are asking us to treaty with the original people, and that's what everybody in Australia should do. If everybody in Australia, every white person in Australia, actually treated with the original people, then we could kick England out because they have no claim to the country. We could legally kick them out under their own.
Say that again, Max.
If every white person in this country treated with the original people, then we could kick England out because England has no claim to this country. We could kick them out under their own law because they have no claim to this country.
So how – that is a very interesting thought because – but if you're saying every white person or, you know, brown or whatever color their people are
Well, if you want
now,
to be here, it's their nation. It's their nation. If you want to be here, it's their nation. The problem in doing this, of course, is you can't find who the elders are. So the white people came in and they divided the nation so much. There are actually 30 original nations here. Well, I think there was 30 when they came, but there was a lot of original nations here. Each one was their own nation in their own right of original people. But when the white people came, they divided all this up and they moved everybody around. So nobody knows who the real elders are now. So there's so much division in the original people that you can never get the elders in one spot to sit down and talk to them because they're all arguing amongst themselves over who owns what and who's the elder and who holds the law here and who holds that. And this has all been constructed by the white people. So they've created this incredible division amongst the original people. So it's been an almost impossible task trying to unite the original people. I've been trying for years. A lot of people have been trying. A brother I've got up in near Darwin who's been messaging me on and off for a couple of years who's desperately trying to unite the elders up there simply so we got someone to treaty with. That's the hard thing. And again, it's a Western construct. So they've been very clever the way they've put all this together and sewn it all up.
I'm typing, asking Vin to get Yothu Yindi's treaty. Vin can't control himself. He wants to come in. He wants to ask you something. Will we let him? Because, you know, I don't know whether we should let him.
Your show, Jill.
Will we let Vin in, Max?
May as well. What's up, Vin?
I'm teasing him. Go on.
Thanks, folks. Sorry. Just a quick one. Just in relation to Ken O'Keefe, Max, he put up a video and he was, I have to say, absolutely spectacular when he was talking about the banking system. I actually mirrored the video with that small section of what he was talking about. He was just incredible. He nailed every aspect of the banking system in that 4 minutes, 37 seconds. He was incredible. Do you know the video I mean?
Look, I'm not sure. Was it on RT or Press TV or something like that?
I think it was on RT.
Yeah, well, that's Ken's very passionate about the banking system.
Oh, like,
and he's spoken about it enough now that he can put it in a nutshell. And he's good like that. It's good, and it's good that he's getting the airtime on things such as RT. I think they're even talking about giving him his own show. So that would be great.
Well,
that's the head of the snake. The banking system is the head of the snake. I mean, the people that we're working against have an unlimited supply of money, and that's a real issue. And a lot of people can't get their heads around that. They've got an unlimited supply of money. They print it out of thin air. Every dollar you spend on trying to wake people up, they can beat you a billion to one. They can do it every minute of every day. That's hard to combat against that type of advertising power and media power, you know. So this is what we're up against. So, yeah, it's good that he's addressing it. And I think I know the video, but he's done a few lately where he's addressed the money system, and good on him.
Well, it was so concise.
What was he exactly saying? Sorry.
Sorry.
What was he saying, Ben?
The treaty video for you, Red.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll back out now. Thanks very much.
No, Vin, I'm asking you a question. What exactly did the guy, I did watch that, thing. I can't remember. What was the nuts and bolts of what he was saying about the banking systems that Max can
It's the privately run bank system. It's the private issuance of currency, which is the cause of the problem. Through the private issuance of currency, the banks have bought every bank, every government, every military. They've got the whole place sewn up. And until we address the private issuance of currency, we're barking at walls. We're not going to do anything. Doesn't matter what we do until we address that, it's all over, you know?
Do you want me to play it for you, Jill or Matt? It's only 4 minutes, as I said, and it's powerful. I was reaching for somebody to get me a bottle of champagne.
I think you'd better play it, Viv. Thanks very much.
Who have paid the ultimate price, and some whose names we'll never know. So many people, good and decent people, who stood up against all odds and accepted certain death because they could not sit by and watch what is effectively a gang rape of the planet. We sit by and watch a gang rape, and we do nothing about it. Of course, in this room, we have a whole host of people who are doing something, and it is an honor and a privilege to be amongst people who care enough to do something. And I believe wholeheartedly that when we take full responsibility I believe that is the period we are in right now. It is the challenge of all times. It is an amazing time to be alive. And we do everything that we're capable of. We will wrest away this power, and we will take hold, we'll take responsibility, and we will create a better world. And in conclusion, what I will say is that if there is one single thing that we must do, we will not have a better world unless we do this. And we could do this tomorrow if we really want to. We must take away the private control of the issuance of money. What we have is a situation in which a tiny, tiny minority, many of whom call themselves Jewish, although I think they're much more satanic and sadistic than anything else, but we have a tiny group of individuals who have been given the power to print and issue an infinite supply of money. Think about that for 1 second. An infinite supply of money. Imagine that you yourself had an infinite supply of money. If I had an infinite supply of money, what I would probably do is immediately I want clean drinking water for everyone on this planet. I want it achievable tomorrow. I want it now. I want a house for everyone. Everyone have a shelter over their head. I want proper, healthy food for everyone on this planet. I want everyone to have everything that they require to live a dignified life. We could do that tomorrow. We could take back the power of issuing money. We could have that power tomorrow.
And in a nutshell, I think that's it. Sorry, I just really felt it was important to play that. Sorry, I'm going to back out now, Jill. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mike.
You're perfectly... thank you very much. You reckon, Max, it's true. You know, and you talk about that, about mathematically perfect economy.
Well, I don't talk about mathematically perfect economy. I'm not the person to ask about that. You need to talk to Mike Montagna about that. But I mean, what Ken said is true. Yeah. He's very passionate about it. I actually hadn't heard that speech. That must have been at the conference in Tehran, I think, because I hadn't heard that. But yeah, he nailed it. I mean, that is the problem. And until we address that, we're in a situation where everybody's forced into a state where we've got to pay to be alive. We're constantly supporting an economic model, which is privately controlled. And because it's privately controlled and it's based in permanent growth, what we've got to do is we've got to harvest resources, make them into products, but we can't make the products to last because the economy is based in growth. So the products have got to break, so they end up on the trash heap, so we get more resources. Oh. So basically we're just harvesting resources and turning them into rubbish in order to support this economic model. The only result of this economic model and the private issuance of currency will be the reduction of this planet to a state where it can no longer support human life, and the discarding of the human race. That is the only possible result of continuing to support this economic model. And it's the head of the snake. We exactly. have to cut the head off the snake. So the hardest part is getting to become aware of it. Money is something everybody uses every day, but it's something they just take for granted. I mean, there's been books and volumes written on this for people for years, and it goes in one ear and out the other. And we tell them that, hey, look, you're a slave to this artificial scarcity system, this system of artificial scarcity, which we could fix overnight if you were to pay attention, and they just don't pay attention. Mm. It's amazing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all that inbuilt obsolescence. And I don't know if I said this to you the other day, but it's like the original light bulb, you know. They had to design it with really weak filament so that it would break so people could keep making money and rather than make the light bulb last.
Well, yeah, that's what it's about.
You know,
it's because we've got to support the economic...
It's a big garbage dump.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mm. So we've got to pay attention to this. That's the problem. And because the currency is issued privately, we're all placed in a state of scarcity because there's never enough... You know, it's all issued with interest, and there's never enough money in circulation to pay off the interest on the loan. So everybody's kept running on the treadmill. We've never got time to experience ourselves, experience our lives. All of our lives are dedicated to supporting this economic model. See, that's what the harvest is when they harvest you. They're not harvesting your money. They're not after your wealth. They're after you, your time, your thoughts, everything you do. Your whole life is what they harvest from you via this economic system because it's a privately run system. So we need to address that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it's not a state of relaxation. I always feel like a total dropout because I'm so into relaxing. I just, you know, you just get so, you know, I think if you're going to earn money, you just should earn an awful lot of money in a very short period of time. Like, I, you know, live in a tourist town, so I can go and pick up $100 for a massage, and then, you know, I only have to do a few massages and I've got enough money to live on, which is fantastic. But I just think everybody should be able to work like that. I'm really into the 20-hour week, not the 40-hour week, if we're talking about that sort of thing. Now, look, there is a question. Somebody wants to know about the OPPT. Do you know anything about the OPPT?
The OPPT, like, there was a filing that was put in the UCC back in, was it late 2012 or something like that? Someone filed into the UCC system that if you are free, okay? Now, the UCC system is what's used to basically control people via this, you know, this paper-based slavery system. So that filing basically said, okay, well, if you believe this paper-based system is real, well, here's a filing now filed into the paper that says you're free. It's filed into that paper-based system. Oh. So do you feel free now? Right? That's what I saw in the OPPT. Oh. It's just that one filing. I thought that's golden, that filing, for those people who believe the fiction's real. That's a golden filing. But the rest of it's all fiction. It's all rubbish. I mean, they're trying to construct new systems and all this sort of stuff and all this sort of stuff. There's no parameters within this system. There's no piece of paper you can fill out that's going to free you from the system. It's just another attempt to find a way through the fiction by using the fiction. What you got to do is realize that it's fiction. What I liked about the OPPT was just that one filing that said, if you be, you are free. So my concept is, well, if you think the paper is real, well, here's something filed into the paper that says you're free. Do you feel free now? Because I've been trying to tell you that you're already free for the last 6 years, but you're not listening. So that's what I saw in the OPPT. The rest of it was rubbish. The rest of it was someone else's idea of reality again. You don't need any of these systems. All you need to do is to know that you are free. So I'll clutch at any straw that may demonstrate that to people, which is what I did with that.
But then, of course,
once people got hold of that, they tried to construct all of this rubbish around it, which was completely irrelevant. They completely missed the whole plot, completely lost the whole concept of what it was supposed to be, and turned it into this structured rubbish again, like people do, you know.
But this is what happens. You give something a label, and the label means something different to me than it means to you. And so, you know, we hallucinate and then when we get a really narrow-minded mind, you know, if our mind, you know, we grab onto it and go, oh, he's into the OPPT, and then the whole construct comes down, whereas what you're saying is that point there is a very good point. And I'm only,
The whole thing is...
You do that with all of it.
Well, the whole thing is people are looking for remedy with someone else's ideas. They're not seeing that the remedy lies in their hearts, right? Even when you look at all of this stuff, all the systems that people construct or whatever, even when you go and read the old philosophers and all this sort of stuff, you're getting someone else's idea of reality, someone else's concept. Even the old philosophers, Jung or whoever they may be, Krishnamurti, all these people, all they can do is share with you their experience in life and what worked for them and how they came to the realizations that they've got. It's not up to you to take that on as your own reality because you've got your own reality. All they can do is explain how it worked for them in the hope that it may provide a few clues which will lead you to self-discovery because that's what it's really all about. It's about self-discovery. We've got to put down all the books, put down all this stuff, put down everybody else's ideas of what reality should be and look at your own idea of what reality should be. See, that's what's wrong with this is we're not free to do that. We're not free to express our potential. And that's my beef with the whole system. I wouldn't care if there was a mechanism in place which helped our lives run smoothly, which is a lot of what this system done. You know, we got roads, we can travel. There's all sorts of good things about this system, but there's all this control about it as well so that we're not in a position to express ourselves or experience the art of our lives or discover our true potential or even really discover ourselves. That's my beef with the whole system, and that's what I want. I want a chance for human beings to express itself, mankind to express itself and reach our potential. We can't go down the direction we're going because all we're doing is destroying our habitat and we're squabbling and fighting with each other all on the way because we're judging each other by other people's ideas and other people's parameters and this social and economic model. It's ridiculous, you know, I think with the way the system's exposing itself, we've got a real opportunity for change here. So that's why I do what I do, you know.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And I really like, I don't want to use the word cherry pick because, see, when you use the word cherry pick, but it was actually a good word, even that has connotations. But this is right. When we ascribe to any ism, even if it's sovereignty ism, you know what I mean? Like, because it doesn't cover the whole, all the elements of society, which is why I keep saying there's at least three that I can see, which I keep repeating myself ad nauseum, which is sovereignty, community rights, and citizen-initiated referendum, like direct democracy, in terms of looking after those sort of social aspects, even though every one of them, when you explore them, like even exploring sovereignty, is profoundly deep and then becomes a completely spiritual activity. And I think you agree with me. Well, I agree with you anyway. Everything you say seems to agree with that. Now, you also found something interesting in trust law, and I'm fascinated with that because, again, knockers can come along and go, oh, somebody ascribes to trust law or blah, blah, blah. But I noticed that you have had some successes within the court system, which sometimes we find ourselves stuck in. And I was going to ask you for some examples of your court success and how you relate that to trust law. And what is trust law and how do you relate that to sovereignty or freemanhood, whatever you want to call it?
Look, even trust law is a construct. The whole thing is a construct.
Yes.
There's no real remedy in it. There's a spiritual approach to everything. You know, the problem is we're still looking for remedy within the system. There is no remedy anywhere in the system. You might find little victories here and there that are small victories which should help them to tie up their loopholes. That's all it is. There's no remedy in the system. And the problem with sovereignty is people are seeing this as a personal journey. They're believing that if they can step outside of the system themselves, they'll be okay. They're not seeing the bigger picture. There is no escape from this system if you live on this planet until you address the system at its root core, which I suppose would be the money system, what Ken's talking about. You know, like all of these excursions into sovereignty, these excursions into trust law, you're already sovereign. Trust law is a fiction. It's a construct. It's the same as justice. It's another idea that somebody had. You know, you don't need any of that stuff. You need to step into your heart right now and question anybody's authority over you. If you're doing the right thing in all that you're doing, you're taking the moral high ground in all that you do, the system's got nowhere to go. The problem is that we try to do this on our own. We don't do it in an empowered community. That's why all my focus on my shows has been in getting to know your neighbours and empowering your community, because that's where your strength is. You need to have these people around. This is it. There is no remedy. Mm. I would suggest people don't even go down the trust law rabbit hole. You don't need to go down any of these rabbit holes. What you need to do is step into your own heart, stand up and speak your truth. Call a spade. Don't be afraid to speak your truth and to step into your heart and do what you do because you're motivated out of love, out of wanting a better future, not because you want to go to battle with the system. That's another thing that happens in this free man movement. A lot of these people are just criminals that want to not pay their bills. And they're people who want to go in and fight with the judge. You know, I don't want to go in and fight with the judge. I don't want to establish my authority over the police. I just want them to go away and stop messing with people's lives. You know, the whole thing is fiction. It's all fiction. You don't need any of it. Step into your heart, speak your truth, take the moral high ground in all that you do, and get to know the people around you, and you can change the world. Get yourself in the right vibration. Raise the frequency. Step out of the fear. Realize we've got a huge potential for some positive change here. Consciousness wants to shift. Don't step into the fear. Don't step into the hatred. Do what you do out of love. Do what you do out of integrity, and you don't need any of the other stuff.
That's the thing, you see. This is why people still want that sort of lack of empowerment, in which we don't want to go and work out the solutions and contemplate and argue.
People want someone to come along and hand them the solution to this system. The solution is you. The solution is in your own heart. No one can hand you a piece of paper or tell you that you can go and fill out a form or you can go and say anything to a judge which is going to free you from this system. You've got to step into your own heart and stand up and speak your truth. That's what's going to free you from the system.
Yeah, but to speak your truth, first you have to know your truth. And so we have to get over that sort of conflict of interest, in a way, of one aspect of us saying, I just, you know, give me the solution and I'll follow that that sort of formula. And then the other aspect of it, which is you have to look inside, you have to argue with all of those formulas. You have to, it's like the essence of refined gold. You have to keep hammering and hammering and hammering at it until you, you know, really do refine it.
Yeah.
And people don't want to do that.
Yeah, and like you've got to do things, I mean, sometimes in ways that people can understand, which is why direct democracy or a public-initiated referendum may work to begin with, because it's you've got to try to reach these people in a language they can understand. I mean, even direct democracy and referendums, I mean, these are all fictions, but they're a stepping stone. They're a stepping stone back to something better. Even when I was talking about this 1% tax that you can introduce and get rid of all the other taxes, I mean, tax in itself is violence. We don't want any tax. But people understand it. So if you can give them a tax which is going to free them and then gradually eliminate it because you've re-educated them over a generation or two, we've got to find these stepping stones, you know. So publicly initiated referendums for us to, for example, express a loss of confidence in the Abbott government's ability to govern simply because he's destroying the water table through allowing fracking to continue and he's supporting the war crimes of Israel would be a great start, you know. But these sorts of things are doable because you're speaking to the public in a language they can understand. And we need things that are going to get public attention, and that would be successful in that at least. Get the ball rolling anyway.
And I love the way, and you're calling it publicly initiated referendum, which is better than calling it citizen initiated referendum when you're playing with the names.
Screw citizenship. I don't even acknowledge citizenship. I don't even acknowledge that this country is called Australia. It's called country. Australia is a British invention.
I love it.
Australia is a British invention. There is no Australia. The original people just call it country. So, yeah, I live on country. Someone said to me the other day, you're living in Queensland. I said, I'm in Queensland. If I was in Queensland, I'd be buried up to my neck. I'm on what the Crown calls Queensland, but actually I'm on country. I'm not in Queensland at all. You know, so get your words right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, that's when I asked you where you lived and you said up the coast on the border of New South Wales. Okay. Are there any more questions that I have to address? Because we've only got you for another 5 minutes. Oh, look, I wanted to ask you about feminism because you say we're gender neutral in an absolute sense, right? That's a sentence that I got from something you said.
Yeah.
Now, we have lots of problems with some of the people. We have lots of arguments about feminism and pro-feminism and anti-feminism and all of this. And, you know, I'm like, there's this good thing about feminism and there's this bad thing about some feminists and there's some feminism that says absolute horse shit and there's other feminism that says brilliant stuff. But I really liked your sentence, in an absolute sense, we are gender neutral. Now, that is quite fascinating because it brings in all sorts of implications like about hormones and sexuality and socialization and blah, blah, blah. So I thought I wouldn't mind you addressing that if you'd like.
Well, in an absolute sense, we're gender neutral because in an absolute sense, consciousness is gender neutral. The gender comes from the body we inhabit, and that comes after we're born into it. Consciousness is gender neutral. That's the way it is. Your consciousness may be more inclined to be attracted towards males or females because of what your gender is once you're born. Whereby a male may be more attracted to a female because he's a male. But in a conscious sense, before he's in physical form, it's gender neutral. Feminism, I mean, feminism isn't about freeing females. Feminism is about enslaving females to the workforce. Feminism is about enslaving females to the same parameters that have brought the entire male race down and brought them down from the divine masculine. And they're doing it by disguising it as a quest to reinstate the divine feminine, which has been squashed by the patriarchal society. Feminism is simply a commercial venture to turn women into men and make them subservient to the commercial model. Get out of commerce. Get out of the whole economic and social system. Right. Why do you need any isms? These are all constructs. These are all constructs revolving around this social system, which itself is a construct.
So what's that got to do with being an amorphous spittoon? I mean, what do you think Germaine Greer would have to say about what you just said? Not that I think I'm an amorphous.
Germaine Greer has publicly said one of her biggest regrets in life was ever writing her book, The Female Eunuch. and ever promoted
really?
Feminism. If she ever saw what the promotion of feminism was going to do and the loss of the
yes.
family that
yes.
was going to result and the delinquent
yes.
children that was going to be as a result, she would never have written the book.
Yes.
And she openly said that.
But it was a misinterpretation of a book in many ways.
She was looking at the world from an economic and social perspective, which are both constructs, which are designed to divide and separate human consciousness. So she was looking at the world from a war perspective
right.
when she wrote the book, you know, which is, isn't
mm-hmm.
to say, I mean, everybody was, because we're all trained to look at the world.
I never read the book.
You know?
I never read the book. I was very anti-feminism for my life because I just happened to say I'm a people's liberationist. I don't care about women's liberation. I already feel liberated.
It's just more separation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's people's liberation that is what we want. So look, Max, we've come to the end of the hour. It was so fast and furious, and I loved it. And thank you so much for coming, and thanks for clearing up a lot of those things. There are other questions on other topics, but we've run out of time. You're writing your blog at the moment. What's your blog about?
Oh, I've got to write a column.
You're writing an article?
I'm writing a column for the New Agora newspaper. I've got to write another one for Boom Festival for their magazine. I've got to do another one for the Rainbow Serpent Festival in January. So I've got a bunch of writing I've got to get done. They've all got to be done.
Oh,
like everything's got to be done like this week. So I've left it all to
right. Okay. So. Max Egan, you're a very special man. And we're very lucky to have you in our world and on radio and contributing to the world in the ways that you do. And so we'll go out playing Treaty, Yothu Yindi. Would you like to say a final thing about Australian sovereignty? There's one thing I do know was that in 1701, I think it was, there was a parliamentary statement in England that when so-called people on boats, I don't know what you call those people, those sailors, would go to a country, they had to leave... they weren't to interfere with the customs of the people, and that was the law that was in place when they took over Australia.
When they arrived and never left.
Anyways, yeah, that's right. And that's exactly what happened, isn't it? Like they had the original people from them for a while, and then they started to notice they were chopping down sacred trees and stuff, and they said, well, when are you leaving? Like, because every other person who'd ever been to Australia only stayed a while, you know, and they were sort of surprised.
They wouldn't have survived if it wasn't for the original people. They looked after them when they first got here. Look how they've repaid them.
Yeah, look at our heritage. So you did say one thing about if everyone in Australia signed a treaty with the original caretakers of the land that they, what did you say, original,
well,
like sign a treaty, that, how, what umbrella, how could you sign that treaty and make it effective and not just another sort of
by finding out who all the elders are, which is what we've been trying to do for the last 5 years. So
yeah, but what would be in that treaty?
Well, just treaty to become part of the tribes of the country. I'm treaty with the Noongar people. I'm Noongar. If I want to, I can call up Governor Phillips' charter and say, well, I'm under original law. I'm not under your law according to this charter because I'm adopted by the Noongar. So I'm a Noongar. So I'm under original law, not under British law. I'm not under British law until I choose to start using your stuff. Like your license and your registration and all the stuff you provide, I'm not under original law. Problem is that I want to use the stuff. I want to use their infrastructure. I want to use the roads. I want to use the stuff. And it's actually the post office that owns the roads. A lot of people don't know that. It's the post office that owns the roads. Yeah. It goes back to the Pony Express. The roads were put there to deliver the mail. That's what the roads are for. They're put there for commercial activities and they're actually owned by the post office. So they're not, there's all sorts.
Wow.
This is a whole other rabbit hole to go down. But anyway, this is all fiction anyway. But anyway, look, I've got to go, darling. So
all right.
It's been nice to chat. And nice to chat to you too, Vin.
Yeah.
Thanks, Max.
And I'll
yeah, it's been great, Max. So yeah, come back again. We'd love to have you on again because you're a real breath of fresh air on People's Internet Radio, even though we've got quite a few breaths of fresh air, but you're definitely a lovely breeze. So Max Egan, keep up your good work. Thank you so much for coming on People's Internet Radio. Loved having you.
My pleasure.
And
thanks,
good night, Jill. Everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Max.